This podcast is sponsored by Newbury Farm Plants in Silsoe, central Bedfordshire. Newbury Farm Plants for all your plant needs, from bedding plants to shrubs and trees and even the more exotic. Newbury Farm Plants now also hosts Hosta Coffee, which is their on-site cafe. So whilst you're having a nice coffee, you can browse amazing plants. Newbury Farm Plants in Silsoe, central Bedfordshire. Welcome to Plants, People and Places, the podcast in which we speak with plants people and find out what special connection they have with their plants. In this episode, we speak with author of several gardening books, BBC Gardeners World magazine column holder and garden designer Jack Wallington. Welcome to the show, Jack. How are you?
Hi, Philip. Thank you for having me on. I am very well, thank you. It's just stopped raining for a split second.
Oh, wow. Has your year been so cold and wet as it has been down in the south as well?
It has, yeah, because we're based in West Yorkshire on a hill, quite hot, quite an elevation. But it has been a really unusually wet start to the year. I mean, it feels like it hasn't stopped raining since mid last summer.
Yes. I think
that's the experience of everyone.
It definitely is, yeah. It's horrible here. And I notice it with my cuttings as well. I've got a hydro pod, loads of cuttings in there. Normally they'd root in a week, and now I'm still growing some that I put in April, I think. So it's not great. But I think I'm jumping ahead a bit because, first of all, could you introduce yourself, please?
Okay, I can try. So I'm a designer and a writer. I guess my work life is split between those two things, garden designer. But I suppose at heart, I'm a naturalist. So I really enjoy love the wild. So that's naturalist, not naturist.
Oh, sorry.
I am fully clothed, Florida. But I love wildlife and being out in nature. And I think that's a big part of me I'll probably talk about. But also, I love growing edible food. So we don't try to be self-sufficient because I think that's just not practical for a full-time job. But I do try to grow as much food as we can ourselves. And we live on a small farm, which is more like a tiny small holding. As I mentioned, in West Yorkshire on a hill.
Yeah, and I have been over, and it is a beautiful spot, but I can imagine that it can get quite windy and cold and everything up there as well.
It can absolutely get very windy, and even we're in mid-June and things are still being blown and snapped, and it is cold, I can tell you.
Oh, no. I mentioned in the introduction that you'd written several gardening books. Which ones are they?
Yeah. Thanks for mentioning. I've written sort of one most people know about is probably Wild About Weeds, which is my first book, which is an exploration of how plants we call weeds are actually just all plants and wildflowers, and actually a lot of them are really useful for design. And then the other one, the follow up to that, was A Greener Life, which is a bit broader, and that's more of it's kind of an intro, but an advanced intro to organic wildlife gardening, I suppose. And it covered everything from design and ornamental plants through to edible plants and wildlife. And I've also worked with the RHS on a third book, which is separate to those, which is called The Gardener's Book of Patterns. And that's looking at patterns in planting and in gardens in ways that people might not have expected.
Yeah, no, I've read them all, not even written them all. I've read them all, of course.
Yeah, you ghostwrited all my books.
Yeah. But they are absolutely brilliant. And I know my mother loves your second book. It's always on her little coffee table there. I think it's even on top of mine. So you've won there.
Well, I'll have to thank her later.
So what originally gave you that love for plants and general nature then?
I think it's, I guess sometimes you can say it's hard to really know what it is, but I think really it was just when I was a little boy, I just loved being outside and looking at insects and seeing how plants grew. So in the wild, it was always interesting seeing new shoots in spring and then how the flower buds appeared and emerged and unfurled slowly. And I think that's where the real interest came from. But then also when I was a little boy, my grandparents gave me a small amount of money to buy a greenhouse. Like, it wasn't a big greenhouse, but to me it was a proper one, a proper metal one in glass and everything. Yeah. And it was in there I grew cuttings and stuff and seeds. So it's like from a really early age, I think that interest was just nurtured by my family, and just by my own interest and curiosity with it. And I think that's where it came from, really. And it was quite early on growing tomatoes and edibles and taking cuttings from my dad's cacti and succulents and stuff. So it was one of these things where it was just an innate interest, I suppose. It was built in me for whatever reason. And that's just exploded as I got older.
Brilliant. I mean, I think a lot of planty people tend to start with cacti. The amount of times I hear that, and I started with cacti. I know my nephew is not into plants at all, but he had this cactus collection as well. It seems to be one of the starters, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose really they're quite, if you have the right conditions, they're quite easy.
Yeah.
Because you can't underwater them.
No.
Well, unless you probably could if you really tried. But it's just they're interesting as well, because they're quite interesting shapes and they grow in an interesting way. I remember going to the Princess of Wales glasshouse and Kew Gardens for the first time, and that just blew my mind, because I was so excited about going to see all of the cacti. When I got there,
Right,
they're
yeah.
even more amazing thing. It's just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's actually one of my favorite spots at Kew. I love that Princess Wales conservatory there as well. Yeah. I don't think you've
Yeah.
always been in gardening professionally, though, have you?
No, I kind of, when I went to uni, I did something completely different. I kind of studied business and economics and marketing and went off into the world of social media and writing and online running websites, essentially, for different creative industries. And yeah, I did that for about 20 years. So that was a real, really enjoyed it, but I've always felt something was missing. And I kind of had this in my mid 30s, I just thought, what do I really want to do the rest of my life? And it was like, well, the natural world is calling me. And one thing led to another, and I just retrained, jumped off the career cliff and went off into a different line of work, really. And it's been a challenge a lot of times, but it has been good. It's been one of the best things I've done, actually, as challenging as it is still, even.
Yeah, but I think you still use your experience with websites and everything quite a bit, don't you? Because don't you do a newsletter? Is it World Way newsletter? Sorry, can't
Yeah, I
remember.
do. I started a newsletter a few years ago, called it The Wild Way,
Oh, I did right.
which,
Well.
yep, you did. Yes, thank you. And it's kind of like an exploration into it's my thought process, really, around how can we look at the wild and nature and learn from what's going on there to make our lives easier in the garden, both ornamentally and for edibles. But yeah, so all I think that earlier career, it wasn't a waste of time. Although I kind of wish sometimes I did things a bit sooner. It's fed everything else. So perhaps I don't think I would have been able to write the books if I hadn't had the writing experience from my previous jobs and explaining complicated stuff like education and technology and other crazy things, which I had no experience of before. So learning stuff and doing this kind of deep dive and explaining that in a clear way to people, really shaped what happened to me in the gardening world, really.
I know, brilliant. And if people want to sign up for the newsletter, where can they do that?
Yes, I'd love it if they did. It's at wildway.info, and it's completely free for the weekly newsletter. But if people really enjoy it and want a bit more, they can pay a small amount per year for a larger monthly magazine-style newsletter as well. So it's kind of two different tiers accessible for everybody.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, yeah, I hope people do, because I know work that you've done, and yeah, it is always very good and always a really good read. So yeah, definitely people sign up for that. I've asked every guest so far, and what is their favorite plant, which is quite often quite a difficult one, but I am still going to ask it. Either your favorite or some plants maybe that you've recently come across and you think more people should grow. Have you got anything like that?
I have. So I was going to give you an annoying answer of saying, how could I choose one plant? But I have narrowed it down to one.
Oh,
But just the small caveat, I thought I'd start off with probably my favorite plants are wild orchids.
oh, yes.
But just because they, and particularly British wild orchids, because I've grown up in this country, and I think finding amazing wild plants in the countryside that you've grown up in, is particularly exciting. You can go around the world and there's orchids all over in every single country around the world, and they're all incredible. But I think just seeing them in a field is so jarring in a way. You don't expect it. So there's lots of different British wild orchids I really love, or European wild orchids, I should say. But my favorite one still is the greater butterfly orchid, called Platanthera chloranthra,
Wow,
which is
don't
kind
know that
of quite a
one.
large, it's quite a large orchid, and it has, like most wild orchids, has a stem with multiple flowers, small flowers going up. But each little flower is part of it. They look like little white angels or aliens in a way, made with little wings. And so it's really beautiful. And it's fairly rare. You wouldn't, it's, it is across the country in different spots, but there aren't very many of them. So it's quite unusual to see them. But when you do see it, it just stands above the grasses on woodland edges and just kind of glows, this kind of glowing color. So I really love that one.
Oh, brilliant. Actually, it reminded me of lockdown in 2020 because I'm pretty sure you went orchid hunting here in Sandwich Bay and paid me a surprise visit. I think that was like the first person I had in my house. I think we sat outside actually during that time where you could have people out in your garden. And yeah, I remember that because this area is really good for orchids as well. And actually, the other day I walked down Sandwich Bay as well and I saw loads and loads of lilied orchids. It was just a bit too early, so there was only one that had a few flowers on it. But there must have been at least a patch of 50 or something like that. Really beautiful.
I remember that day really clearly, actually, because I think it was just it was one of the first times we could meet up after one of the first lockdowns, I think. And it was particularly hard on lots of different people. And for me, I just wanted to see friends. I was like, I'm just gonna go and see you. So it was really lovely to see you and just to hang out after having so little contact at that time, and talk about plants, and then also to see, the population of lizard orchids near you and other orchids actually, and all wildflowers is quite incredible once they get going. And lizard orchids are huge; they're the biggest British orchid, so it's quite incredible, really.
No, they are beautiful because only last year did I see my first one because sometimes I cycle to work. I should do it more often, but it does take me through Sandwich Bay as well. And on one of the golf courses, it was only about 5 meters from the road, there was a lizard orchid as well. And it was quite nice because it was actually on the golf course, so it was behind the fence, so not everyone walked right up to it or did anything with it. So yeah, it was there, but this year was definitely a bigger colony. And we've got some at work as well, so you should come down to Walmer Castle. We've
I
got
will. I'm
orchids, pyramidal orchids, and common spotted out in flower at the moment. So yeah, just in a small meadow, which has only been there since the 90s, I think. So they're really establishing. They're beautiful plants. So thank you for picking that as your favourite. I can't agree that it is my favourite, but it's definitely in the top 10, I would say, for me personally as
They're
a.
not foliage enough for you, are they, really?
Well, possibly. Is there also a plant that always has a special memory for you? So maybe someone gave it to you, or you remember it from growing in someone's garden, or you got it as a special nursery, perhaps?
Well, there's one plant we were talking about recently, which is the pink dandelion, which you gave to me. I don't know the botanical name for it, I'm afraid. You might remember, but it's
Yeah,
so
Taraxacum
it looks like a
pseudorosidi.
dandelion. Right, okay. But I need to jot that down because I think I've lost the label for it. But essentially, it looks like a dandelion, but it's slightly tinged pink, which is quite amazing. It's fully hardy, and it's still. I think you were saying it might not be as hardy as the regular dandelion. It's certainly not
No, I
spreading
think.
as much as the regular.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not spreading as much because I've tried. I've planted several around, and I haven't got any left at the moment, actually. So no, I think it doesn't spread as much. It should be as hardy as normal dandelions as well. But yeah, I said it's a beautiful pink with a yellow center, that lovely dandelion.
And there's others as well. Like I really love Astrantia, for instance. That
Oh
when I
yeah.
first started out in horticulture, I was like, there wasn't one flower that stood out to me that I really loved. And so I sent went out on a mission going, there must be one flower that I really love. And just when I first saw Astrantias, which were really late in the day compared to other people, but I really was quite late into the gardening business. But just the shape of them is quite contemporary. Even though they're seen as a cottage garden plant, they're quite jagged. And if you get the bolder colors or the bright white colors or dark colors, they look quite contemporary. So that's quite interesting. And then lots of wildflowers hold different personal memories as well.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, I remember you actually even was it selecting some astrantes as well because you were trying to get bigger flowers?
Yeah, and that is a interesting experiment, which is doing well actually. So yeah, when we first moved to Yorkshire, even when we were in London, I was growing astrantia all the time. In every design, I put astrantia in, so I really like them, and they're good doers. But here, I was like, I really wanted to get the proper shaggy cultivar shaggy, which is also I think some people call Marjorie Fish, which is a really large white flower. And quite a lot on the market aren't the true flowers, they're just not big enough. So I was kind of saving seed over the years and also for darker flowers. And yeah, so when I first moved here, I grew hundreds from seed, whittled it down to my favorites. And we're now, this is our fourth summer, unbelievably, here. But there's a few in there. I'm like, they're quite amazing, some of them, and quite interesting. So I think I have got one that, if it's not the true shaggy, it's as close as you're going to get. It has the same large white star-shaped flowers. And I've got one which is the opposite, which is the same size, but in a really dark red, crimson, purple, black color. So they're quite exciting. But so far it's doing well. I just need them to bulk up so I can divide them out, I think.
Spread them out. Maybe do some more crosses with those then. Be fun.
Definitely, yeah.
Well, it's only fair, I mean, to mention a plant that I got from you because I was just looking at it yesterday. I once got a Musa Bengal tiger from you.
Oh yeah,
Yeah, and it is
how's it
still
doing?
alive. It's growing in the moat at Walmer Castle.
Oh
The main stem is struggling a bit, but it's got two pups. So it came through another winter. And I remember picking that up from your place in Clapham. And it just fit in my Citroen
yeah, we struggled to get it in there, didn't we?
C3.
I'm excited. I'm so excited about it for lots of reasons. Because one, I love it as a plant, and it obviously would not survive up where we are in Yorkshire. It was when we had it growing in London. But that banana plant is famous. It was on TV. It was in the presence of Monty Don. When we did, we took Chris and I, my partner Chris and I took part in a TV show on BBC called Big Dreams, Small Spaces. That was a plant that came in a fern pot, so we didn't even buy it for our garden. It was just in there, and it was amazing because it has that amazing dark variegation on it. And yeah, we really loved it, but we couldn't take it with us. But I'm glad you took it, and it's surviving.
Yeah, it's still there, and I do actually tell people that story that it was on TV once with the very famous Jack Wallington, obviously, and some other
Has it got a
Monty
sign yet next to it?
No, great. Yeah, it's doing really well. We did wrap it up this winter, but we hardly got any frost here this year at all. So, we've talked about plants that you really like, and some of them you even love and have grown yourself. But is there anything that you really don't like? So have you got a plant ache?
I do. I was chatting about this with my friend Alice recently because I always feel bad when I talk about stuff that I don't like in gardens, but that's kind of my job as a designer, is like leaving stuff out. And so I, just as a caveat, I really love it when people like stuff that I don't. So you love variegation. I don't like it that much.
Oh, it's good speaking to you, Jack.
for instance, but I really love that other people like these things. So, but my top plant ick, and this is going to cause upset up and down the country, but it's cultivated roses. I really, really don't like. I've never liked them, and I'll go on to explain why.
So is it
I
hybrid
like
teas
wild
you mean, or
roses.
David Austin roses, or
Sorry?
is that like hybrid teas then, or David Austin roses, or generally anything that's not species, or
Think anything that's off speed, anything that's double and really, really blousy. I know I like them as cut flowers, and I love the scent of them. But it's just, I don't know why, it's just always jarred with me that it's too bred. And I think it's this thing when you see, it comes from growing up around going in parks throughout your life, and you see those rose gardens, and there's nothing but leggy stems with a few sorry looking roses in them, nothing beneath them but bare soil and a few other like self-seeding plants, and it
Yeah,
just
and
looked
black spot.
awful. And black spot, and that's it. They kind of represent this line of horticulture where they're really weak. They've been bred into really weak plants, and so you have to be sprayed with pesticides and fungicides. Not, I mean, there are stronger plants being bred now, but I suppose all of these things just add up to I'm not so keen on them. I do still plant some into gardens if clients really want them, but I tend to lean more. I prefer the climbing roses, which are bigger. And wild roses like dog rose and single flowered roses that look more wild and a bit more natural. And they're just stronger, that don't need so much pampering and pruning and protecting. It's just like, I think it's just so it's a bit of a bugbear of mine. That's my plant ick.
Yeah, no, I can see what you mean. And it's
Don't
funny,
hate
actually,
me.
because the last three episodes have been people saying that the plants they hate are the really thoroughly bred, like bedding plants and everything. And now we're onto roses. So, yeah, maybe we do prefer the slightly more natural look nowadays as well. I suppose that's a possibility. And one of my favorite roses, which I've planted lots of at Warmer in the woodland, is Rosa rubiginosa, which does flower as well with a single flower. But the nice thing about that one is that the foliage actually smells of Granny Smith apples. Yeah, that's why that's my favorite. And you walk past and you will actually smell it. You don't even have to get too close to it. So yeah, I do agree with that. Yes, there's some beautiful species roses out there as well, which you can use in very natural areas, of course. So yeah, no, lovely. Thank you very much. That's a very good one. We'll add that to the list of plants that we don't like. So if we look at your horticulture career as well. So, is there anyone who's like a horticultural hero for you?
Yeah, I always find it really difficult. The people that inspire me the most are probably wildflower experts and growers. There's so many people that inspire me in little ways over the years. But I feel if I try to narrow it down, it's going to be people like Christopher Lloyd, obviously, Dan Pearson, Pete Aldolf, have all influenced me over the years. There's also lots of nursery growers at the moment who are really looking at naturalistic but also really sustainable stuff. So I'm lucky to have there's a couple called Kim and Stephen Rogers who run Dove Cottage in Halifax near us.
Oh,
They're
nice.
really, really talented, done really well at a business, but I know that they really love natural wild plants as well at home and stuff. So I've been having lots of chats with them. But I suppose to narrow it down to one rather than waffling, I think there's one lady called Lyndon Hawthorne. She had a book recommend when I was being trained at Royal Botanic Garden in Edinburgh. One of the tutors there recommended her book, and I think it's still one of the best reference books just for shrubs. I actually can't remember the title of it. It's something like Gardening's by Shape, Line, and Texture, or something like that.
All
But it's
right.
Lyndon Hawthorne. She's a very smart lady, and she's really interested in wildflowers and wildlife and the relationship between insects and plants. So if you follow her on social media, she does these amazing discussions on what insects use which plants. And I find that really exciting. So she's got this horticultural background and wildflowers, and it's kind of, yeah, she's wonderful, actually.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. There are loads of really, really good specialist nurseries out there, aren't there? And I do think, yeah, we should really try and support those. My favorite specialist nursery, I think, apart from Newbury Farm Plants, obviously, who sponsor this this podcast, is also Grow Wild Nursery. Have you heard of them? Yeah.
I've heard. Yes, I have. Whereabouts are they based
They're
from?
in Scotland actually, and really good.
Oh,
And if
great.
you order plants from them, they actually come in cardboard pots as well, or cardboard containers, I suppose, all biodegradable. Everything they send out, all the packaging is biodegradable as well. And yeah, of course, they haven't got things in huge numbers always, but it is just really nice to have nurseries like that who look after the wildlife, look at more natural gardening as well, and yeah. Sell plants, sell amazingly rare plants as well. So that's always good, isn't it?
I love these kind of the smaller nurseries that are doing. There's some that are doing some really amazing things. And I think it's really important to support them because it's not hard to transition. Sorry, it is hard to transition to to more sustainable practices at first, but especially if you're a pioneer and the whole industry is, you're kind of leading a whole industry with it. So I think, yeah, it's quite, and we're really lucky to have nurseries where the people growing this stuff are as passionate as we are. That's such a special thing in our industry, I think, to have that.
Oh, absolutely. People who grow their own plants and propagate them themselves instead of just ordering trays and trays in and just potting them on, growing them for a few weeks, well, months possibly, and sending them out again. I think there's really something to say for that, because these people actually know what they're growing and know what conditions they'll like and what will work as well, I suppose. So yeah, no, brilliant. That's some really good plant heroes then, or horticultural heroes. That also brings us to the end of the episode. It was really, really nice to see you again, Jack. Thanks for being on the podcast, and I hope we can meet up again soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. That was a really fun chat. And it's really good to see you and speak to you. And we'll definitely meet up and we'll do an official opening for the banana plant in Warmer Castle very soon.
Yeah, we do need a celeb, of course, like you, to come down and say a few words. It'd be
Oh,
great.
you. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Jack, and see you soon.
Thanks, Philip.
Plant of the week this week is a lily. I don't often do flowering plants, actually, because I love the jungle and the foliage and everything. But this is quite an unusual lily. It's called Lilium must-see, and it's quite variable, so you might have some orange and white flowers, or I might have some green and white flowers, but they're also really like twisted, all the petals, and I feel that it's a really good one to use in an exotic garden, for instance, just as a feature plant like that, because it's certainly something unusual and something that most people probably wouldn't have seen. If you'd like to know more about this plant, then pop over to our Instagram page or our Facebook page, Plants, People and Places Podcast.